Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Millennial Movie Mix, when you absolutely positively got to pod every motherfucker in the room, except no substitutes. I am one of your hosts, Justin, and with me as always is...
Sarah.
Ashley.
And Kristen.
I'm shaking in excitement. I'm not even going to fucking lie. If you clicked on the podcast, you know that we're talking about Jackie Brown, and I wonder if you've ever fucking heard of the movie.
I had not before this.
I've watched it one other time before that, before this viewing for the podcast. I had to watch it with my mom's third husband, and so I wasn't really into it.
You had to watch it?
Yes.
He was like, I love this movie and need you to see it.
Yes, and we were snowed in, and my husband we were engaged at the time. I think he was out of the country, so I was like, well, fuck, I guess I'm stuck watching Jackie Brown with stepdad number two.
Oh, so you were kind of miserable through it.
Yes.
Oh man,
I was.
I hope that was able to be shaken off. All right, we'll have to see as we go through.
Yeah.
All right, so, and then Kristen, you of course, I mean, you've
yes.
heard of it.
Well, yes, and yeah. I've been subjected to
subjected
it
to it
you
subjected to
no
it.
I just mean that I've you like definitely were like you were gonna watch this movie.
Yeah.
yeah
I didn't like tape your eyelids open or anything.
No.
That was, you were free.
I was free.
All right, so yeah, we got Jackie Brown from 1997. It's a Quentin Tarantino film, so I'm sure that you have heard of Quentin Tarantino before.
Oh,
yes.
What Quentin Tarantino movie stands out to you?
I have to think about this. Hold on.
I used to I was really big into Tarantino. And then you learn more about the dude and you're like, maybe I'm not so into Tarantino.
Oh, Django Unchained.
Oh my God. Yes, Ashley.
Yeah.
I think that's one of his best.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That I can watch that one over and over. Just like I can watch Jackie Brown over and over. Spoilers.
Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kill Bill.
Oh my God. Kill Bill. Sarah?
Let me think. He did Hostel, right?
No.
No.
He was a producer of Hostel. Eli Roth did Hostel, but it was Tarantino who backed it, money-wise.
Okay. Grindhouse? Did he do Grindhouse?
Yeah, he did Death Proof and Grindhouse.
Oh, yeah.
When Rodriguez did Planet Terror with Rose McGowan. But I had this thing for Tarantino as I was growing up because I loved dialogue and I loved this movie. But like I said, you kind of, I grew up, and the more you learn about the dude, and I read Rose McGowan's book, Brave, just has some blurbs in there about how not cool Tarantino really is. And it's kind of I don't like this movie because of Quentin Tarantino, even though he's responsible for it. I love this movie, and I put this movie out there for our May Queens Month.
Yas, queen.
For Pam Grier. Had any of you ever heard of Pam Grier?
No.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because we saw Pam Grier on TV a lot in what show?
Yeah. Oh, the name escapes me right now.
She's cool. She's Kit. Kit
oh,
Porter.
Yeah. The L word.
The L word. That's such a great show. Original L word. I even like the reboot that's on. It's just not on right now. But yeah, so Pam Grier was in L word, but I'm not surprised that you haven't heard of her. She is really famous for the 70s for what were called blaxploitation films.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Have you ever heard of that?
No.
So they were films like Shaft, where you had, they were very directed for a targeted audience, a black audience, and they were larger than life characters, larger than life soundtrack. It was, you think of black and exploitation. That's the combination of what they named them, blaxploitation. I remember, I can't remember if it is Foxy Brown or Coffee. These are both movies that Pam Grier did. Just to let you know a little bit into the film, she's fighting off two dudes in a room, and she reaches into her afro and she pulls out a tiny single shot pistol.
Oh shit.
What?
Yeah. So like, that's the kind of movie we're talking about here. And her films are like Foxy Brown, Coffee, Sheba Baby, Women in Cages, Black Mama, White Mama. And like, and they range from like films where her boyfriend gets killed, so she trains herself up and she hunts down the drug killers who killed her husband, her boyfriend. And then in another movie, her sister gets attacked and raped, so she goes on a rampage and gets revenge.
Okay.
And then she starred in this whole line. I'm a shit you not. There were women in prison movies.
What?
Where it was basically like softcore lesbian porn.
Oh my God.
With like plot lines. So like, it was her movie Women in Cages.
So it was
Black Mama, White Mama was about a black prisoner and a white prisoner who plan an escape from the prison together. It's fucking crazy insane, but I totally recommend everybody watch it. I mean, all of those movies that I just listed. And so, okay, so if you don't know any of those movies, have you ever heard of Something Wicked This Way Comes?
Only in the context of, only in the context of in Harry Potter, when they're singing the Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
That was it.
Yeah, so this is a Bradbury, I think, book, and she plays the evil witch in that movie. She's got tons of movies, but when you're looking at what else this lady was doing, here are all of the TV shows. Roots, The Next Generation, Love Boat, Night Court, Cosby Show, Miami Vice, and Living Color, Fresh Prince, Wayne Brothers, Pinky and the Brain, Wild Thornberries, The Justice League cartoon,
she
Law
was
and
nine.
Order SVU. She was on Smallville, the TV show.
What?
She is on This Is Us currently. And she is on Bless This Mess currently. For movies, she got to have her Steven Seagal movie, Above the Law, where they partner up. It's fucking awesome. She's in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. She's in Escape from L.A., The Adventures of Pluto Nash, Mars Attacks. She's in fucking Snoop Dogg's Bones. She's in Bad Grandmas, which is a current film. And then she's in two of my favorite rewatch movies of all time. Jawbreaker and Ghosts of Mars.
So she's in way more that I've seen than I realized.
Exactly. Yeah. She's a fucking queen. Yes.
Like, Fresh Prince was part of my bedtime routine. I would watch Fresh Prince and then Whose Line, and then I would go to bed.
Well, there you go. That's a nice way to relax.
Yeah.
And so what we have to understand is that when she's popping up on all of these TV shows, she is known as Foxy Brown. Like, that's her breakout role. If you don't watch any of the other films, go just Google Foxy Brown. But she would have been, she's a name in those TV shows. And so when we were thinking about making the category, I was like, I kind of dominated. And I'm like, you know what? The best female-driven movie that I think I know, and I don't know why I lean towards it, but I think it was Jackie Brown. So I'm really excited that we're throwing this out first. And no matter what we say about the movie, I think that Pam Grier deserves more accolades than I think she gets. She was ripped off and not nominated for an Oscar for this movie. And Max Cherry was, but she wasn't.
That's bullshit.
Yeah, she was nominated for a Golden Globe, and so was Samuel L. Jackson, but they didn't win.
Well, that's shit.
The movie was a success. It was filmed for $12 million and made $74 million.
Oh, dang.
So it was really, people flocked to see it because of Tarantino. And then I don't know. I mean, we'll talk about how you guys feel. And then at the end, we'll maybe talk about some audience stuff. I know that I love this film, and I have no idea what triggers might be brought up, but I'm prepared to hear them.
So now, the list seems short, but it's like they're themes that are pretty heavy. Yeah, very pervasive. So we've got guns, murder, a racist justice system, commodifying women, misophonia, and Michael Keaton.
What? Michael Keaton? You want to get crazy?
He just has like perpetual pre-cum ugly face, and I hate
it. Has what?
Oh my god, Ashley.
Has what?
Perpetual pre-cum ugly face.
Oh no.
Has I'm gobsmacked.
Me too. Michael Keaton is like my Batman. He's my Batman.
Perpetual pre-cum
ugly face.
Ugly face. Oh my. I'm one, I've never heard anything described like that.
No, me either.
And that's why I'm here.
Things that come out of your mouth.
And two, Michael Keaton, I'm sorry. I just... That's... We're going to leave that in. We won't edit that out.
I have zero loyalty to Michael Keaton. And like just the way he holds his face through this whole movie. And the like the Donald Trump walk. I'm like, cut it the fuck out, dude.
I didn't know that he had that. So later on down the line, when we get into our sad movies, and I want to do a great film called My Life, it's going to be tainted already.
Wow. Yeah.
At least in Beetlejuice, he might be covered up. And so.
Okay, but like Beetlejuice is an eccentric movie, and I feel like that would fit in.
Have you seen Beetlejuice?
Yes.
No.
Okay, it's because of Michael Keaton.
I'm very familiar with the makeup, though, because I'm a big fan of Face Off the show.
Okay, yeah. We have, I think that Beetlejuice might be on a list for the future. But yeah, most definitely, it's going to be fun talking about Michael Keaton in that movie. Uh-huh. I'm kind of shook. I wasn't prepared for any kind of Michael Keaton trigger.
Because yeah. He is Beetlejuice, right?
He is Beetlejuice.
Okay, well, that makes perfect sense.
Okay, so those are our triggers. I'm sure we'll talk about the scenes when they pop up. We may not label them, but we'll get through this plot summary. Kristen, did you have anything that you missed?
Well, drug use, I think. Incarceration, but no.
Okay.
Language, the N-word repetitively.
Yeah.
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 And the word fuck a lot.
Yeah.
That doesn't offend
Motherfucker.
Me.
Motherfucker.
That doesn't offend me.
I can't even. The Samuel Jackson in this movie, I live for.
Yeah.
And I mean,
his Pam Grier, fucking hair in this movie.
Yeah, it's beautiful, isn't it?
I mean,
flowy and beautiful.
Here's the thing, his hair, it's like, but like his beard.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I know. If only I could grow a beard, I could be like Samuel L. Jackson.
Well, you only need.
But alas, I can't.
You only need like 12 hairs at the end of your chin, and then you braid those.
On my whole face. 9. Maybe 9 1/4 on like a really 5 o'clock shadow day. I don't know. All right. So let's get into the plot summary, and we'll talk about some other people as they pop up.
In 1995, Jackie Brown, a flight attendant for the fictional Mexican airline Cabo Air, makes ends meet by smuggling money from Mexico into the United States for Ordell Roby, a gunrunner living in Los Angeles. Ordell is under surveillance by the ATF, so he uses couriers to move contraband. When another courier, Beaumont Livingston, is arrested, Ordell assumes Livingston will become an informant to avoid jail time. Ordell arranges for $10,000 bail with bondsman Max Cherry, then lures Beaumont into a car trunk and kills him.
Across 110th Street. What do you guys think about the opening? That just this, like, this intro that just, like, lets you into the movie.
They played the whole song. That was bold.
It was much too long for you.
I love it. I love it. I can't help but sing along. I'll even ask Alexa to play it. I don't know what it is about this movie, but I'm so connected. And I don't know if it's because everybody loved Pulp Fiction. And I actually saw this movie before I saw Pulp Fiction or Reservoir Dogs. This would have been a movie that I went to like go rent when I was like 16 and it already had kind of been out, and I would find it on the shelf and like picked it out. And then like learning about Quentin Tarantino.
This soundtrack was killer, honestly. It was, so good.
Yeah, the music was really good.
Gotta add that to my Spotify.
When I was doing some research, I saw that Tarantino described the film as a hangout film, and he compared it to some of his favorite, what he called hangout films, and saying that they really benefited from a second, a third, a rewatchability. And for me, that's absolutely true. This is a movie that I think I can put on and do other stuff, but then I'm drawn back to watch it. And as dumb or as slow as it is, when it starts and that song plays and you just see Pam Grier and she's in her like ordinary, beautiful glory, just going to do her job. And then it flips over to Ordell and Lewis, and then you get Melanie. And it's just like this ensemble that hooks you.
It took me way too long to realize, because I don't usually look anything up about the movie before I watch it. It took me way too long to realize that this was young Robert De Niro. And then I was like, what? What?
Young Robert De Niro?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So age is a big thing in this movie. And so I made sure to note ages. How old do you think Robert De Niro was in this movie?
Like 40 something?
Not quite. He's 52.
In the movie?
He's 52.
Holy shit.
Robert Forster, I think he's supposed to be playing 56, but he's 54. Samuel L. Jackson is 47.
Damn.
Bridget Fonda is 31. And Pam Grier is 46. That's like, I'm 10 years away from 46. Closer to 31. 11 years from 47. It's just, yeah. But you think about how many people, I think, expected a shoot 'em up, violent, Pulp Fiction style film. And Tarantino, he's adapting from a book called Rum Punch by Elmore Leonard. And it's very realistic. He also changes the name of Jackie from the book to the movie. In the book, it's Jackie Burke. But he wanted to pay homage to Foxy Brown, so he named her Jackie Brown.
Oh, shit, okay.
In this movie. I have some quotes that I want to talk about, but I've fucking been talking for a long time, and I want you guys to talk about the movie. I got to control my fucking self.
The one thing that I really liked in the beginning was Melanie answering the phone after he's like, "Damn, bitch, answer the phone!"
Fucking,
and
she's like, Sarah.
"Hello, it's for you immediately."
Yes, that's, I fucking wrote that. That's one of my favorite goddamn parts.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I really, you guys, I really like Melanie, yeah. And.
Yes.
When we get to the part in the end, I have some words.
Oh my god, Sarah, I'm with you. Yeah. We're doing May Queens, and I really think we need to acknowledge Bridget Fonda in this film. And Bridget Fonda as an actress. Do you guys know any other Bridget Fonda movies?
I'm sure I do.
Bridget Fonda is my, like, teenage years. Bridget Fonda is in one of my favorite rewatch movies. I keep saying that, but it's true. All right, so She's in a film called Lake Placid. She's in a film called Single White Female. She's in a film with Nicolas Cage called It Could Happen to You. Do you know any of these movies?
Nope.
No.
So Lake Placid is about fighting off a giant fucking alligator. And let me tell you, Betty White's also in the movie.
Damn.
So, yeah.
Wait. Does she feed little baby alligators at the end?
Yeah. Spoiler.
Yes, I have seen that movie.
Yeah. Single White Female. This is a pivotal film. This is about the girl looking for a roommate, and then the roommate begins to copy everything she does and becomes obsessed with her.
Hmm.
It Could Happen to You. She's a waitress, and a cop agrees to tip her with his lottery winnings.
Oh, yeah.
And then he fucking wins the lottery. And so they share the win.
Shit.
Oh, it's an amazing movie. But the all-time best Bridget Fonda movie is called Point of No Return.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that.
It's based on the French film La Femme Nikita.
Hmm.
Oh my god, we're gonna have to watch it sometime. It's about a drugged out person who gets taken by the government, and basically because of her actions, it's either we're gonna kill you or we're gonna train you to work for us. And she's held like prisoner, but she's like trained. It's fucking insane.
Sounds like an interesting one.
Yeah. So we got to give props to Bridget Fonda. And Sarah, I'm so glad that you like Melanie in this movie. And I can't wait to talk about it more.
Honestly, she was my favorite fucking character.
I agree with you. She was like super smart, observant, knew exactly what she wanted. Loved
sassy
it.
Sassy as fuck.
Super sassy.
Yes. Agree. I think some of the best lines come from her. And in later scenes, we'll talk about some more stuff that pops up. So then, Ashley, what stands out to you in these opening moments or in this first section?
So I was kind of on the same page with Sarah. I saw the first couple scenes with Melanie, and I was just like, oh my gosh, I really like her. I think that, let me see, Jackie is absolutely gorgeous, and the acting in this film was phenomenal. Absolutely, absolutely amazing.
Yeah, just a testament is that there's not a lot of action, and yet, I mean, I was not bored. I was into what they were saying, and I guess maybe I'm a very weird person, but at 16, I was into this movie.
Mm-hmm.
16?
I think it's because it's a kind of an intellectual thing. Like, you have to kind of pay attention to the subtleties, and you're kind of into that kind of thing.
Because when the film came out, I didn't know about it. It came out in 1997. I was 14 years old. And I don't think that I remember watching it on TV, but as soon as I turned 16, I made sure that I was always going to the video store. I worked at Dairy Queen. And I was able to, you know, I would get off work at Dairy Queen, go to like a local Family Video, get like 2 for $1 VHS tapes. And like, I just devoured every single movie, like every night. And Jackie Brown was one of those movies. And then I went out, I bought the movie. And so I had this on VHS, then I had it on DVD.
Oh man, the days of VHS and DVDs. Now DVDs are
out. Now it's all it's all streaming and buy it and download it. Mm-hmm. I like to have the actual. Yeah. I still have a copy of Jackie Brown. Well, because I collected Quentin Tarantino films. And now I collect it because it's Jackie Brown. That's Pam Grier, you know. But I want to emphasize that Jackie Brown fucking runs this show.
Yeah. Yeah, she does.
From the very start. Really.
She's so intelligent, and she, like, I don't know, it just reminded me of a chess grandmaster. She, like, played everybody.
Exactly. Yeah. Before we really dive into her character, we kind of are introduced to the world around her. And one of the very loud, unique characters in the movie is Beaumont Livingston.
Right.
Played by Chris Tucker.
Not long for this world.
And I love the exchange between Ordell and Beaumont.
I do too. I wrote this down too as a note that in watching it like for the podcast and having seen it already gives you a different perspective when you're listening to what Ordell is saying.
Uh-huh.
Because he's being really super subtle, but basically screaming at Beaumont, going to die. Like,
so Sarah, you hadn't seen it. Did you know that Beaumont was going to get killed?
I didn't think that he was going to kill him in that way, but I thought that I was like, this one's going to die. He's going to get in the trunk and he's never going to get back out. What did you
think about him, Ordell, getting back in the car, driving around, the shot pulls out to show
and then
you.
He drove around the fucking block. He didn't even drive that fucking far. He drove around the block and then went into a yard that was bumpy, opened the trunk and shot the fuck out of him. Like, okay.
That's cold.
Also, no, the worst part, not really, but like the whole thing is like, he's leading Beaumont with this whole story about like a lawyer. He's like, I gotta go meet this lawyer. And then finally, when he's showing Beaumont the trunk, he's like, I'm not gonna get in this trunk. And he tempts him with this excellent meal. Beaumont's high as fuck, high out of his mind. And so he's like, I'm gonna tell him he's gonna get this really good meal and then he's gonna get in this trunk. I was like, no,
oh, yeah, I know.
The poor guy doesn't get his stoned meal.
He wasn't even trying to go out tonight.
He just needed munchies, and then he ate the dust.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he ate the dust instead.
He ate the dust.
I started our podcast off with one of my favorite quotes of the film, the AK-47. I fucking love that. And then Beaumont stands out, and I absolutely love when Ordell goes to meet Max Cherry. And he gives Lewis the keys to his car. And he's like, you just press that button and it'll go, doop, 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 and you get in. Unlock, you get in. And he's like, don't mess with my presets. And Lewis is so fucking confused. I love it.
I know. I loved like all the old tech references and stuff like that. It was really fun.
Yeah, later on down the line, someone's going to talk about how to page.
Oh my God, yeah.
And it's like, dial this number and then put these numbers in and then put this number.
Do you really have to dial that much when you page somebody?
You did, like, I think.
Yeah, you did. It was like four separate numbers. Well, like four separate long strings of numbers.
If I remember correctly, there were different options for what you could have the pager say.
Yes.
Depending on what numbers you pressed in to call the person.
Yes. Oh, geez, that sounds so complicated. So then you'd,
like, be pressing all these other additional numbers, and yeah.
Yeah. So, pagers and beep, beep, cars.
Beep, beep, beep.
So,
how many people would, I don't know. The whole time I was watching this, I was just like, so how many lives are worth $500,000? Like, that was the big question that I had in my brain.
How many? Unfortunately, probably a lot more than we think, because people hoard money.
Yeah.
And I'm just like thinking about all the people in the movie that died because of it, and I'm just like, damn, that's something.
Mm-hmm. Or like who died for this money? Like, how many people, not like how many people in the world are actually worth a $500,000, but how many people are like worth sacrificing for $500,000?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I got you now.
Yes.
I went somewhere else. Okay.
Acting on information Beaumont had already shared, ATF agent Ray Nicolette and LAPD detective Mark Dargis intercept Jackie as she returns to the United States with Ordell's cash and a bag of cocaine, though Jackie was unaware that the cocaine was stashed in her luggage. Jackie is sent to a county jail, which alerts Ordell that she might become an informant. Having received payment from Ordell, Max retrieves Jackie from the jail. Ordell arrives at Jackie's house to kill her, but having anticipated this, she pulls a gun on him that she has taken from Max's car. She negotiates a deal with Ordell, whereby she pretends to help the authorities while smuggling in $550,000 of Ordell's money, enough for him to retire.
Shut your raggedy ass up and sit the fuck down.
I love
she
I love
she
it.
Fucking points that gun at his crotch.
Yes.
Queen.
I think that scene is amazing. It's all in the dark. You're hearing their voices. You're hearing the tension. I mean, we're outside of the TV and I felt the tension.
Yes, but she's fucking cool as a cucumber. Like, she lets him get all close.
Uh-huh.
She lets him get his hands on her.
Yeah, she's like, get your hands off of my throat. Oh my God. She kills it in this movie. And when
she does.
When she comes out of the jail and you hear the 99 Years song, that's Pam Grier singing.
Is it?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, the song's called Long Time Woman from back in one of her prison woman days.
Oh shit.
Yeah, so that's Pam Grier singing that song. And so she struts her ass out of that prison. And Max Cherry falls in love.
Yeah, puppy eyes.
Love at first sight.
And she uses that.
Yeah.
She uses it hard.
Yeah, she does.
Oh
my gosh, at the end. I don't know. I'll tell you what I thought about
it. I got a lot of words about the end and how I feel about that. But I really.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, he's picking her up and then talking about going out. And she feels like shit. She feels dirty as hell. And he keeps talking about wanting to take her to all of these bright-ass places because he's just looking at her like she's the most beautiful thing in the world. And I think that it takes her a moment to realize that.
Right, that he's like, oh.
And I think even even the next day when he comes over and talks to her, I don't know if that's in this section or not, when he comes over and talks to her to get his gun back, and then
she's like in her robe, I think, just like,
And then they actually have the heart to heart about why Jackie, why she eventually is going to need to do what she does. How Jackie's life is fucking shit, basically. She's 46 years old. She had gotten arrested before. So she's knocked down to this lowest thing. I say 16,000 because that's the salary that she makes.
Yep.
And that would be 27,000 in our time. And so she's like living on nothing.
She's worked too hard for too long for too little.
And then to think about starting over. I mean, it really hits hard that a lot of people go through this and you reach a certain age. And society kind of just thinks, oh, well, you're expired. Who's younger and better? And the idea of Jackie having to go into that world again is too much for her. And she'd rather face death and try to get the big reward than have to face the mundane reality that her life didn't amount to what she wanted it to amount to.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And she's done with that.
Yeah. She's not going to take it anymore.
I mean, honestly, if my life was like that, I would probably do the exact same thing. I would try to get the $500,000. Like,
and definitely fuck Ordell over in the process.
Fuck yeah.
Well, she's really smart. So she knows at this point her life is on the line too. I mean, right. From the moment she's arrested, she's got to know that. But
I mean, from the moment that she does it.
More on my thoughts about her plans later.
Okay. In this section when she's being like arraigned, she goes through the court, a dude named Sid Haig plays the judge. You guys recognize
him? Oh my god.
Mm-hmm.
The bald-headed guy with the big bushy beard from A House of 1,000 Corpses, Devil's Rejects,
and
A Thousand Other. He was also in the exploitation films with Pam Grier in the 70s. So that was kind of cool.
Huh.
Also in this section, we talked about a great soundtrack, and Jackie introduces Max Cherry to the Delfonics. Didn't I Blow Your Mind This Time?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't I? Again, I'm a fucking giant geek, and for some reason, this song just stuck with me my entire life. And there's just something so soothing about it.
Mm-hmm. It's like hypnotic.
Yes. And it's used over and over in the movie.
Right.
And then she blows our mind.
It does. Yeah. It blows your mind.
She sets up a deal with Ordell so that she knows that she's going to double cross Ordell.
Yeah.
But like, she's just like letting on what her plan is.
Oh, yeah.
Good. For the plan, Ordell brings in Luis Garra, a former cellmate, and Sharonda, one of Ordell's women. Unaware of Jackie and Ordell's plan to smuggle in $550,000, Nicolette and Dargis devise a sting to catch Ordell during a transfer of $50,000. Unbeknownst to all, Jackie plans to double-cross everyone and keep $500,000 for herself. She recruits Max to assist and offers him a cut. During the test run, Jackie, with Nicolette and Dargis aware, smuggles in $10,000 of Ordell's money to swap with Sharonda at the mall food court. After Jackie leaves, Max, who is monitoring from afar, observes an unknown woman swap bags with Sharonda. Max informs Jackie, and she confronts Ordell. Ordell states that he used Simone, another one of his women, to secure his money as backup.
When Simone sings Baby Love to Louis, I love that part.
Oh my god.
And she's like, I have to go pee.
And then Ordell is like, is she doing her show for you?
Yeah. It's such, like, when you don't expect, like, what's going to happen in the movie. Because, like, really you're like, is anything happening? Like, because every scene that's going on, it's painstakingly real in waiting for the setup, waiting for the sting. Going through every motion like you would in real life and then getting that payoff. It's just that you're doing it with like amazing actors and awesome dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like,
do
it in like this mundane way, but revealing this like elaborate plot at the same time.
The anticipation.
That's right. And then I think that, I don't know if this is also the part where it is, where Jackie takes Ordell out onto his balcony and fucking just like yells at him and like reams his ass.
Yeah.
And you realize that that's Pam Grier acting as Jackie Brown, who's acting like she didn't know what happened and she was pissed about it.
Right. So that she had some kind of like believability to Ordell.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this is where, like, I mean, you're starting to see it more overtly. But you can see the clues from the very beginning of the movie that she's had this in her mind for a while.
Yeah.
She's been thinking about this for a while. And I fully believe that she got arrested on purpose.
Oh, you think?
Ooh.
So that she could...
Do you think she dropped a line to Bordeaux?
What?
Wait, what's Beaumont. His face? Beaumont. Do you think she, like, dropped a line to him, like... Hey, you want to get rich? And then he dies.
Oh, I don't know. I would hope that she wouldn't have tried to trust him.
No, I just feel like she knew all along the only way that she could make this work correctly was if she could set up a sting. And the only way to do that is to get arrested.
Well, I mean, she was pretty cool throughout the whole thing, and she felt like she was in charge. I mean, I do love when she goes from yelling at Ordell on the balcony to then, like, cutting that steak, talking to Nicolette. So, and she was playing him like a fiddle, so. Mm-hmm. I'd have to go back and listen to the whole, when the agents are talking about the information that they got from Beaumont. And I honestly can't remember how Beaumont got picked up. This time.
I don't remember.
I've literally seen this more times than I have fingers and toes, and I can't remember that.
He had unregistered weapons, and he was concealing a weapon.
Yeah, but I wonder what he was doing, where he was, how, like, well, just random police picked him up, and then ATF courier, got involved. So. So they were watching him already.
He does the same thing that Jackie was doing. He's a courier.
She just couriers money.
Yeah.
And he does guns.
Guns or drugs or whatever.
Because we didn't talk about it, but what did you guys think about the women in bikini gun video?
Oh my God.
Demi
Moore. I hated it.
The very beginning.
I was like, this is for a very specific type of person, and it's It's annoying.
I know. And Melanie was like, he only is repeating what he's heard somebody else say. He doesn't know anything.
Right.
He said that he knows as much as I do about the guns. And it's and it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, you see, I mean, Ordell is not an intelligent dude. But yet,
no.
He's got these fucking things like, I got me a 19-year-old Sharonda. I put her up in Compton, told her it was Hollywood. Barefoot.
Yeah, that was really sad.
Yeah.
And
that was really, really sad.
And so you think, how did you make it like this far? Like, I don't know. So I just, I love the unraveling of Ordell. And as we get towards the end, his hair unravels too. He lets his hair down. Yeah. It's all, everything begins to unravel.
Just letting it all hang out.
What did we think about Lewis in the movie?
Oh my God. No.
Robert De Niro.
He plays it so well, but just like, I hate you.
I love when he's taking rips off the bong.
Yes. It's like, you can tell he's just the laziest piece of shit out there.
One of fun.
Like, he can talk the talk.
Okay, 3 minutes later.
Yeah.
That cracked me up.
That hit the spot.
I didn't like him to begin with in the beginning, and then I hated him at the end.
It's strange because in the beginning, he kind of is like this lump, basically. And you don't know how capable he is or what he's going to do. I think that he's kind of a little bit of comedy. And he basically is there to let Ordell, like, talk, to get a bunch of dialogue
right,
out.
Dialogue, yeah.
They're actually, they're two characters who are used in Elmore Leonard books. And so, like, I think there's a whole book about Lewis and Ordell and how they kidnap someone. But kidnap the wife of a rich guy, thinking that they can ransom her, and they find out he doesn't want her back. It becomes like this whole scenario that they're involved in.
Oh my God.
Yes, I think that would be a good movie if we can get De Niro and Samuel Jackson to make a prequel to Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
Then that. Now I'm serious as a heart attack. So. We have Max Cherry, who gets involved in this whole ordeal. And Robert Forster is someone who I had never heard of before and really have not heard of since.
Yeah.
So what do we think about
him? One-hit wonder.
And he was nominated for an Oscar.
Watching it this time around, I get a lot more from him than I did the first time around. And like, his facial expressions and that sort of thing. So, I mean, yes, good acting, but for others to be skipped over, no.
The scene where he talks about doing something about his hair is actually what he did in real life, and he wanted to add that into the script because he thought it brought realism to the character. Yeah. About, you know,
oh yeah, definitely.
And this movie really does talk about men and women aging. And the choices that we make as we age. And that's why I said, especially at the end of this movie, I have a lot that I want to talk about.
Now let's take a break and hear about our sponsor. And now back to the show.
On the day of the transfer, Ordell discovers that Simone has left town with the $10,000 and reluctantly recruits Melanie to perform the swap. Jackie enters a dressing room in the department store to try on a suit. She has told Ordell that she will swap bags there with Melanie, supposedly passing off the $550,000 under the nose of Nicolette, who has been told the exchange will take place in the food court. Instead, the bag she gives Melanie contains only $50,000, and she leaves the rest behind in the dressing room for Max to pick up. Jackie feigns despair to Nicolette and Dargis, claiming that Melanie burst into the dressing room and stole the money. In the parking lot, Melanie taunts Lewis to the point where he loses his temper and shoots and kills her. Lewis confesses this to Ordell, who becomes livid upon discovering most of the money is missing and then realizes that Jackie is the culprit. When Lewis and Ordell get into a heated argument about Lewis seeing Max in the store but thinking nothing of it, Ordell kills Lewis and leaves with the bag. Ordell turns his anger toward Max, who tells him Jackie is frightened for her life and is waiting in Max's office to hand over the money.
Oh my God, you guys. when Melanie is like, Lewis.
Lewis.
She says, you two are the biggest pair of fuck-ups I've ever met in my entire life. How did you ever rob a bank? When you robbed banks, did you forget where you parked the car then? No wonder you went to jail.
Yeah, that really got me.
And Sarah, go ahead and let out all your feelings.
I literally, as soon as this happened, you guys, I was so fucking pissed off. I paused the movie and left.
Oh
no.
I had to come back to it because I was so mad that he killed her.
I bet your face was bright red too.
It was. I felt heated, guys. I was fucking heated.
Yeah, I remember this as always being something that I hated too. Like when I watched it, like I remember for the first time being like, oh my God.
Because it fucking came out of nowhere too. Like she's taunting him and then all of a sudden character. She's fucking dead.
Yeah, I mean,
what a piece of shit.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Well, pretty much, he says. Like, what do you mean pretty much?
Shooting somebody after they're taunting you isn't really like the norm, okay?
Also, like, he can't accept the fact that he made a mistake and like, was maybe incompetent, so he takes it out on her.
Yeah.
And, like, what the fuck?
Or Dell's like, couldn't you just slap her? Couldn't you just hit her? I'm like,
what the
fuck?
Like, this wasn't even Lewis's idea. So, like, I don't know. I'm just pissed that he did that.
Here's my thing, though.
Yeah, he did not handle stress well.
Here's
at
my
all.
Thing. I can totally relate to getting fucking lost in a mall. Why the fuck are the same department store have two or three different levels and they have five different entrances? And which one did you come in?
They have maps.
Yeah, but like you look at you are here and you find one destination and you forget everything else. You get from A to B and then you're fucked. I can totally relate to being lost in a mall. He was overly stressed.
So, like, something I've noticed with a lot of other, like, women I know is we're better at finding our way out than the guys around us. And it's because, like, we have to know how to get to safety faster than guys would care to know. I don't know if, like, that makes any sense to you guys, but, like...
I mean, the mental notes that you make when you're, like, leaving your car so that you know...
Yeah.
Or, like, getting to it. Like, you have to be aware of your surroundings, make sure no one's following you, and make sure that you lock your car as soon as you get in the car.
Yeah.
Like, check your backseats and shit. Like, I mean, that's just, like, ingrained.
Have space to get in your passenger side if you need to, so no one kidnaps you on the driver's side.
Right.
I don't know. So just, like, shit like that. And then he kills her.
Fucking asshole.
I know we're talking about May Queens, and she gets killed in the movie, but
she's a fucking
kills
queen,
in this movie.
Yeah.
Bridget Fonda. So she actually retired from acting.
Oh.
And if I am correct, Bridget Fonda is married to a very famous, musician, a very famous person who writes music.
Who is this, you say?
It is Mr. Danny Elfman.
Oh my God, he's a king.
No way.
Nightmare Before Christmas, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Corpse Bride.
You're lying.
I'm not lying.
He also did
Danny Elfman, so she's been raising their kids ever since.
Lucky bitch.
Yeah, she married him in 2003.
Shit. Okay.
And they have like three kids now. And she's just like stayed home and raised them and let him do his thing. And they've just been a happy family.
Shit. Okay.
Well, good for them.
Yeah, so Melanie dies in this movie, but we honor Bridget Fonda.
Yes.
For being queen in the movie and contributing so awesomely to the role.
I love the part of this movie that it's like all the men are idiots, all the women are running the show. Yeah. Like, that's my favorite part.
Well, she even, like, when Jackie Brown's like, boom, I put a cherry on the top. What did Ordell ever do for us?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so right. And you think about the way Ordell, he's got Simone in one house, Sharonda in another. He's like, for Melanie, she's my surfer girl.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he used all of these women.
Yeah, in more ways than one, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he admits that he's just crashing at the places.
Well, and I think that we also, this is one of my favorite movies, but we have to acknowledge that, like, Bridget Fonda is 31 in this movie, but she was very much, like, picked up very young and, like, brought into this life. And she's been around with older guys. It is heartbreaking. If you think about it, her picture of her in Japan.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That was horrible.
And what Melanie's life has come to. And Lewis is like, oh, how old are you in this picture? I could swear you were at least 16. And she's like, no, I was, you know, this age. And you think, like, did Melanie run away from home? How long's Melanie been on her own?
Yeah, right.
Melanie smokes dope. But was Melanie a prostitute? What? How did she meet Ordell?
Right.
And, like, Jackie Brown is 46, having to rethink her life. Melanie's 31. And there's this whole scene where Ordell's talking about how she's not as, like, young as she used to be.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and then she gets fucking gunned down in a parking lot.
Right. Mm-hmm.
With $10,000 stuffed in her pants.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Mm. So we talked about before how Jackie Brown made $16,000 a year. She pays $267 for a suit.
Jeez.
She's like, this is part of my plan. They'll believe it. That would be like spending $460 on a suit today.
Nope.
Yeah, nope.
So like, where'd she get that money?
I mean, she's just got a bunch of money. Like, she's felt like she's gonna splurge.
Well, maybe the thing is that she's making $16,000 a year from flying the Cabo Air. But I think is that she's also getting a cut from bringing in the money to Ordell.
Well, yeah. Well, surely, yeah.
Yeah, so she's got some more money. That's how she also has all those records.
Yeah.
So she's been buying. But I when Max Cherry, well, one, what do you guys think about the anachronism? When they were able to show you the different times of here's what happened when Jackie went there, here's what happened when Max went there.
Yeah, like the different Lewis and Melanie got there.
Yeah, the different angles.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, if they had done this simultaneously, they could have shaved like 20 minutes off the movie.
Yeah.
Like had just done the breaking up of the scenes and showed like the little boxes of it happening.
Yeah.
Either boxes of it happening or just like in real time.
See, you're right that they probably would have been able to shave 20 minutes off.
Yeah.
I think that you lose, like, I think that this movie, you're supposed to slowly digest it. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it would fit for a lot of modern audiences who want an explosion and who want their screens broken up so they can be seeing five things at once. I mean, you look at Max Cherry and he walks in and sees a bag with $500,000. I think in 2021, we've lost the enormity of that.
Mm-hmm. Like that this was like a perfectly pulled off plan.
Yeah.
And even though the movie was kind of understated, it's still like.
That some ordinary 50-something-year-old guy was a part of.
Right. And the whole cast is kind of older.
Exactly.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't they did flash. It was $500,000. It wasn't $1 million. And it also was a real $500,000. Like a real, all the bills. I don't know if they were real money, but it looked like it wasn't like movie money.
Well, and it wasn't like, hey, all of these $500,000 worth of bills are going to fit in this tiny little
bag. Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. Thank you. You helped me. Thank you.
Bag of holding.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
With towels.
With towels. Beach towels.
All right. So then this is also the section where Max shows up at Ordell's house, right?
Or wherever he's hiding.
Or his house or wherever, but...
Yeah, at Sharonda's house to pick him up. And Max Cherry plays it off like, you want your $10,000 back from Beaumont. And then Ordell's like, I know you're in on this. Mm-hmm. And then so he starts to kind of unravel the... You know, that, okay, Jackie's here. And everything he's saying, Jackie planted for him to say.
Right.
It's just that he was waiting to deliver it.
Mm-hmm. At the appropriate time so that they could lure.
Yeah, exactly.
Ordell. Right.
Because Ordell felt like it was him who was making it happen.
Right. He was very cool, calm, and collected when he did that.
Exactly. But he had to have been terrified.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They get into the car, and the Delphonic starts playing again.
Uh-huh. I didn't know you liked Delphonics.
Exactly. I love it. And then there's this moment where they're just in the car driving. And he's like, you know, if anyone else is in there, if there's a gun or whatever, I'm going to shoot you first.
Mm-hmm.
And there's kind of just like, I think that Max, like, he's like, understands it. And I, you just, again, like, the realism of this moment. We're so jaded by... Like, oh, bad guys are trying to shoot you, so you magically know how to shoot them back and do every fighting move and magically fall off a building and you don't get hurt. Like, we're tailor-made to have, like, video game-style movies. And here you got a 56-year-old man who's hoping to God the plan works, sitting in the car with a killer, and you're given the time to just feel the moment. And I don't know that a lot of us take the time to feel moments in movies anymore. Or in anything anymore. Mm-hmm. We want it fast. We want it bang, bang.
Right.
And there are very few deaths in the movie. It's really a character study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why sometimes something like this will get lost on people who aren't looking at it to analyze it, because there is so much subtlety in it. Like, from the very beginning when we talked about Ordell talking to Beaumont, and he's plainly saying that I'm really angry at you, but he's got a smile on his face the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's right. just little nuances that you have to pick up on.
I love when he's like, you know, I hate to do you a favor, and then turn around and ask for a favor.
Mm-hmm.
And Beaumont's like, what? He goes, I need a favor.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't want to get mad at him, but Beaumont's just so high and stupid.
Right.
But then still won't mm-hmm. easily get in the trunk, which makes him mad too.
Cause like, just get in the he's trunk.
Like, get in the fucking trunk. It's like, I'm not getting in your dirty ass trunk. So they're driving over. They're gonna go meet Jackie Brown, and Ordell thinks he's gonna get his money. Wouldn't you fucking think, Ordell? Wouldn't you have fucking learned?
Yeah.
Like, what a dumb ass motherfucker. And he even said, I might be dumb, but I'm not a dumb ass.
Well, yeah, maybe you are.
But you was kind of dumb.
And I think that's, he's like, my ass may be dumb, but I ain't no dumb ass.
Well, I think that's where greed overtakes him.
And ego.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, does he really think that Jackie is that loyal to him?
Well, he thinks he's hot that scared.
And she's that, and he's like, I've never heard her scared like that before.
Yeah, dummy.
Well, and he thinks he's hot shit. I mean, you know.
Look at his hair.
Yeah. Look at his fucking hair and his little tiny beard and his fucking...
Oh, the way he dresses.
It's so bad. All of it is so bad. He's and like, he off. Just thinks he thinks he's hot shit.
All right, so that section ends. They're getting in the car, right? They're going to drive over.
Driving over, yeah. Mm-hmm. Ordell holds Max at gunpoint as they enter the darkened office. On Jackie's cue, Nicolette jumps out from his hiding place and kills Ordell. Because some of the bills Nicolette marked were found on Melanie's body and Lewis's body found not far from the mall, it is concluded that Ordell killed them for attempting to steal his money. The ATF drops the criminal charges against Jackie for her cooperation. Now in possession of Ordell's remaining money and his car, Jackie plans a trip to Madrid. Max declines Jackie's invitation to join her. They kiss goodbye and she leaves as he takes a phone call. Max cuts the call short as Jackie drives away.
I was kind of shocked that he didn't go with her. I was very
sad.
Yeah. I was like, I thought that he was going to go with her. And then when he decided not to, I was like, what the fuck?
I don't know. I got the impression that she didn't actually care about him this whole time. He just had something she needed, which was like someone who was desperate to help her.
I got that, but at the same time, he still liked her a lot.
See, I did not. I think that sometimes when you are thinking about yourself in a certain way, and then somebody else starts telling you how they see you, it takes you a minute to align to like the reality of it, that she's used to playing and being played, and she met someone who was authentic, and it was part of a world that she was not normally a part of. And I think that she was as intrigued by Max Cherry as he was by her. And she was taking a big risk in trying to get this Bales Bondsman in on her plan.
Yeah.
And I don't think she would have shown up at that office if she didn't want him to come with her.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
This, he'd already mailed her the money. One, she trusted him with the money. He took, what, 10%? And then
His bond fee.
What?
He said it was his bond fee.
That's right. That's all he needed to take. And I think that Max was probably scared of Jackie. He probably might have been wondering if he was being used. And he didn't realize until she had gone that was authentic.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair.
And I remember watching it and just being like, oh, because we're so programmed to be like happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
And Jackie, I think she's going to go have a happy ending. But like, what's Max doing now? Like, Max goes to the movies by himself, doesn't have friends. He goes and sits at night in people's houses. He drives across state line. Now he's retiring.
Right.
And what's he going to do
that he
couldn't have gone with her?
Right.
I know. It made no sense to me.
But I think it's like, I don't know that it made sense after he'd already taken the risk to try to get the money, that it wouldn't have opened a floodgate in like these last, you know, this last half of his life to go ahead and just grab it by the horns in Madrid.
Yeah.
Maybe he was just like circled back to age and like he's accepting where he is at in his life and she's not quite ready to do that.
Well, I think that he loves her, or he's so infatuated with her that he realizes that they're on two different like planes of existence.
Mm-hmm.
That he is go to the mall by myself, watch a movie, do the same thing every night, and she needs more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's a fucking force with whom to be reckoned.
Mm-hmm.
And she does something in this last section, and it's like, I always watch it and I'm like, fucking Jackie, you just can't stop testing it. When she, after Ray guns down Ordell, and she turns to him and's like, you remember when you said you wanted to get him before he got me? Well, you did it. And I'm like, fucking Jackie. And then she's like, before, she's like, you ever think about taking the money? And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
Exactly.
But she's doing it because then they're going to be like, well, she wouldn't fucking do that if she was part of it.
Yeah, it's a whole manipulation.
It's oh my God. She's everything.
Is Jackie chaotic evil?
I don't want to think she's evil. I think she is chaotic Jackie.
Chaotic Jackie.
She is her own Jackie Brown.
Jackie Brown.
But no, I don't think that she's evil. Because she's not malicious. I would also say self-preserving.
Yeah, but she's like fed up, so she's like lashing out. She's like, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna be confident, and I'm gonna totally take my share and be done.
Yeah. That's why I just feel like that no matter what, if the movie is slow, if it's not as gruesome, I think the character of Jackie Brown, she needs to go down as one of the strongest, smartest female characters in the history of film.
Yeah.
And what she's able to accomplish and who she takes down. And I guess if you're looking from a feminist point of view, it's reversed. She has a dude hop into her life who she kind of uses, kind of loves and respects, kisses, and then leaves behind in the end and gets into the car and drives away. Right. They switched the roles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important in talking about May Queens. Because, I mean, a very fluid gender roles now, but you didn't always have that. And you didn't always have strong women who were headlining films and being respected in the films. Jackie Brown, she didn't get naked.
Nope. Mm-hmm.
She was never degraded. Nope. She never made a decision where you were like, oh, well, that's a stupid, you know,
right.
Like talk down to her decision. She was shown, she was highlighted with the utmost like respect and admiration. And that's because Quentin Tarantino really respected Pam Grier. And so he wrote this for her. I mean, he had her audition for Pulp Fiction, and she didn't get the part. But he like called her and was like, you need to do this role. And same thing with Robert Forster. He said, you're doing this movie, and like brought him back. So these characters were treated with respect. And I think that's why I feel like it's such a character-driven movie, because they were shot with respect and they were played with respect. Right. And I view them with respect. We have any final thoughts about this section?
I don't think so.
Or the movie?
I think that it didn't need to be 2.5 hours long, yeah. Personally. I think it could have been done really well in maybe 2 or even 1:45.
What would you have had cut out?
Like the continuous shots. And like at one point, I think Jackie calls somebody and there's like nobody. We never find out what the phone call's about. And she never talks to anybody. Maybe not the entire song at the beginning of the movie. I don't know. It was just a lot of really.
It felt like it took so long to get to the end. Like,
yes.
I think that it kind of felt like a novel on screen. That we were being asked to take our time, know the people, and let something natural unravel. And I can totally understand that maybe as a whole you could think it could be a little shorter, but when I ask you like what you want to cut out, it's because I can't think of what I would think should be cut out, because I enjoyed every scene as a vignette, as something that was self-contained, that was a great scene between a couple actors that then kept building on to the next. And I know, I think maybe I'm also a little biased because of just how often I've been with the movie. But I am not going to lie. I did kind of think that you guys were going to talk about how slow it moved.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did have, like, the first time I watched it, I was like, man, this does move really slowly. Like, I get where it's going, but it is moving pretty slowly. And it really took more, like, watching it more times to fully appreciate it, I think.
And that's what he said, so maybe that's what you guys all
should
do.
It's not like I didn't like the movie. I liked it, and I would probably watch it again. I just felt like it just took a long time to get that far. Like, I guess it was also because I paused it, too. Like, I walked away for a while, but...
maybe. And then when, like, you came back to it, you were already, you had that, like,
right. And I was kind of, I was really angry. Like, I was really angry, you guys.
Oh, I know. And, like, I'm right there with you. Melanie is one of, is my second favorite character in the whole movie. With Jack being number one.
Right.
The actors completely sold me on everything, but, I completely lost my train of thought, you guys. I'm sorry.
It'll come back. All right. So, yeah. I mean, now we have to give our snowflake rating, our final snowflake rating, and our recommendation.
As far as snowflakes, I was going to give this one with maybe a two, just because of the pervasiveness of everything, including the N-word. But really, I mean, I was leaning towards a one, I think.
I think I'm going a one for the N-word because it's very assaulting.
Yeah,
you know, a lot. And especially in this time when we're really supposed to be and trying to eliminate it.
Right.
You know, even, you know, from rap music and pop culture and things along those lines, we're trying to get rid of this thing. And then you look at a movie like this and you're thinking about how great it is, and do you recommend it to someone, and then they're assaulted with the N-word. But then I go back to the realism of the film and what's supposed to be represented by the film and how it's handled. Like, Django Unchained uses the N-word consistently throughout the film, and they're always utilizing it in what we're told are historically accurate ways. And, like, now in Jackie Brown, it's being said by a dude who's essentially, like, a gangster, a gun runner in Compton. And we're supposed to be like, oh, well, because his character would say it, we're supposed to be more accepting of it. And I don't think that makes it any less triggering.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it does not.
So I think that we're kind of forced to be like, I recommend this movie, but no, it's going to drop a lot of in-words. Yeah,
right.
And I think that's what I might have to say about it.
Yeah, I think you would have to say that. Because someone wouldn't maybe be expecting you to recommend a movie that does that now.
Exactly. So I say, remember, it's from 1996. You know, it's got Samuel L. Jackson in it. He uses some colorful language, a lot of N-words.
Tarantino.
What?
Tarantino. It's got Michael Keaton.
Yeah, it's got Michael Keaton. I will tell you that this time I had noticed it before, but I had noticed it in the way that, do you remember when Lewis puts his drink down on the table next to Melanie's toes?
Yes, and her toes touch the, oh my God, it weirded me out, oh my God.
And he, like, wants to move it? Well, now, that's because Tarantino has a foot fetish.
Seriously?
Yep.
He has a foot fetish. And,
oh yeah.
Oh my God. In Rose McGowan's book, one of the first things that Tarantino says to her is something about how, basically, I think he used to pleasure himself to her.
Oh my God.
Like, he's fucking creepy. And then you think Kill Bill, there's the whole scene where the Uma Thurman's toes are filmed so that she can regain the strength in her legs. And that's wrong. Yeah. He's using these films to create, like,
a sexual gratification for himself.
Yes.
Gross.
And he did that in one of my favorite movies of all time.
So you would agree that we could take out the cup and toe scene to make it shorter.
Yes.
Give me an edited version. But I also love that part because that's Lewis. He can't fucking deal with the toes being that close. And he looks at it several times.
Yeah.
In order to do something about it. I don't know. But yeah, but I fucking shame on you, Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, I would probably give this movie two snowflakes. And I also think that the actors completely sold me on everything in this movie. All the dialogue was great. But I think that if it had been anybody else, it would, like, not have been a very good movie.
I agree. I also gave this one. Mm-hmm.
It had to have the actors it had.
Huh?
I said I agree. This movie needed to have the actors that it had.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I think that we all recommend Jackie Brown.
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
Oh, man. I truly had no idea how this was going to turn out.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think I would.
Okay.
Just like, I don't know. Personally, I just don't like I don't like how long it is. I don't, you know, there are a lot of N-words in it, and I wouldn't want to, like, recommend it and have someone get upset about that. And then, yeah, just, I think those things.
Okay, so 3 out of 4 recommends.
Yeah.
Well, fuck, that ain't bad. I will take it. You can't get them all. It's still one of my favorite films of all time. And so hopefully if you listen to the podcast, you'd already seen it, or else we just spoiled the shit out of it. As we wrap up the podcast, we've started doing something where we are connecting the film we're talking about to the greatest show on television ever, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Yes, yes.
6 Degrees of Buffy.
And so I want to talk about a clarification of the rules. I don't know if I did last time, or like, we're not naming an individual person. I'm just supposed to try to find any path to Buffy, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Because I was a little worried if we were picking people, because I was like, man, I'm going to have to cheat, and I don't want to
don't
do that.
Don't do it.
So, all right. So, yeah. So I'm going to work on finding my path to Buffy, because everybody should find their
That's
path
right.
to Buffy.
Ashley, watch it.
I will watch it. And so if you want to know what I come up with, then...
You can find us on Facebook at Millennial Movie Mix.
Or Instagram at Millennial Movie Mix Podcast.
And don't forget to join us next Monday for our May Queens Month with Set It Off from 1996.
Yeah, I think that it's entirely appropriate to go ahead and go for an ensemble cast film. And I don't know if you guys have seen Set It Off, but you got to get ready for Jada Pinkett Smith, Queen Latifah, Vivica A. Fox. Oh, man, you got to go watch it. Everyone listening, go watch it and come back to us later. We really appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.